Question 12. And I'm going to try to answer this as close to an interview style question as I can. I didn't really think about this one. I'm just reading it and I'll respond. The off-season material in Book Wars is interesting and entertaining. Rick getting magic trick gigs, Pete gingerly shampooing and grooming cats, and yourself, me, the interviewee here, working in New Mexico on a Western, the Desperate Trail. You, me, the interviewee, spent a lot of time with these individuals and must have had some great conversations. Did you come away with any enduring insights and or wisdom? Learn any dark secrets you can share without naming names? Regarding the latter, I didn't learn any dark secrets that I'm aware of. I'm not sure if the question can be modified or more specific, but off the top of my head, no, there are no dark secrets. Did I come away with any enduring insights and or wisdom? That I'm sure I must have. I spent about 3 years full-time on the streets with little sporadic bits before and after. For example, I came back to New York at a certain point and sold books again for a combination of cash-making and old time's sake, but there was about a 3 year full-time stretch. And I let me think of the insights and or wisdom. I think the wisdom or insights comes from the nature of the job, working with an eclectic, really eclectic group of people who are also out on the street selling books in a public forum, which is massive, New York City, Manhattan, with a tremendous and vibrant stream of people passing by the bookstands, and having conversations with those people, whether they were regulars or just people stopping by one time as a one-off. So answering the question, the biggest gem of wisdom or the gems of wisdom I learned from that job must be... It has something to do with being self-sufficient. Self-sufficiency. That would be it. Self-sufficiency. I learned to be really self-sufficient amongst a quote-unquote tribe of others who are similar to me, with different backgrounds, of course, as you can see in the movie, different motivations, different aims in life, but there was that commonality. But all the people I knew, let me divide it, I guess, into two parts. The booksellers, the fellow booksellers, and my contact with the non-booksellers, customers, riffraff of the street, police, authorities, whatnot. Let me start with the booksellers. Most of the booksellers, all actually, that I knew were drawn to that occupation unconsciously or consciously, I don't know, out of a need or a desire to be self-sufficient, to have some control over one's destiny. And being able to set up a what was essentially, and is essentially, because it's still going on, there's still bookselling being done in New York, from what I hear. I recently contacted Pete Whitney. We're in touch still. We've been in touch all this time. And he says, some guys are still out there. Zach is still out there, etc. So there's still some people out there. Pete actually is not doing much book selling. He's working as a scenic in the scenic department of various movies and TV in New York. With still maintaining his massive stash of books in his warehouse, I suppose, as a hedge against variables in the economy. Pete is a master of being self-sufficient. And I would see him as a symbol of self-sufficiency, at least from my close contact over on West 4th Street. But Joe, Polish Joe, who sold on 3rd Avenue, was also very self-sufficient in a different way. And I could observe the same qualities over on 6th Avenue. It seemed like everyone who was selling books was doing it as a means of being self-sufficient in an economy which, and a culture which doesn't offer a lot of opportunities for that. I can compare it, by way of example, to Asia, where I've spent a lot of time and where I am now. In Asia, it's exceedingly common for people to set up a little food stand or a shoe shine stand or a key making stand without any regulation at all. And they're just there. It's laissez-faire economy. In the States, in New York at the time especially, there was very little room for laissez-faire economy in terms of a micro business, which is what we were doing as sidewalk booksellers. It didn't seem like there were many, looking back, it didn't seem like there were many options in that environment and in the States in general to be in control of one's destiny, economic destiny, completely, or to be self-sufficient. I mean, the pioneers in America were all, that was their driving impulse, their impetus was to be self-sufficient, to stake a claim and to make a name for oneself, to be something, to make a living for oneself without being hassled by the authorities or the powers that be. And I could see that instinct, that drive there in the sidewalk booksellers. So the insight I have hinges around self-sufficiency in America, which is a hugely textured subject, multi-layered. It seems, well, comparing Asia to the United States, and particularly Manhattan, reflecting back on that time, that there's a tremendous amount of regulation in the States from local government levels, even federal, which is not necessarily the case in other parts of the world. And I think the impulse or need or desire to be self-sufficient is part, it's ingrained into human nature. That is, not necessarily to be a reflexive rebel for its own sake, but actually to have the option to go out and make a living for oneself, to be self-sufficient, to determine one's own economic fate, to know and understand, and this is important, that to know and understand the rules that are governing one's economic fate. That's really important, because from what I can gather now, I've been back to the States, of course, many times, and recently went back to interview for a federal government position, and also was looking and probing for other jobs and so forth, and it seemed to me that the alternative, if you are not able to find a standard regulated job, is either to do something online, which is great. You know, the internet really opens up a whole new dimension in terms of being self-sufficient. But at the time, I don't think in 2000, late 90s, it was not as robust. The whole online making a living type platform. eBay, yes, you know, you could go out and do stuff by eBay and whatnot, but It's the impulse to be self-sufficient, to be able to set up a business with a minimum of regulation, which is what we had as sidewalk booksellers, and still make a contribution to society. And to do that with a minimum of regulation is a fabulous thing. I think that's part of the initial intoxication of feeling that you can is evident in the movie, that a person could go out there, set up their own micro business, really, with a minimum of regulation, make some cash, pay their rent, pay their bills, and still be valued in the community with a minimum of overhead and a minimum of regulation. I think the market mentality, the ancient souk mentality, is lamentably missing from the American experience these days. It seemed to be then. I could not discern many places that were unregulated in the States where you could do set up shop like we did on the streets. Yeah, you could go to a flea market and rent a stand and, you know, get a space, but that's kind of quasi-regulated. I think what Lawrence Ferlinghetti was talking about when he said Book Wars was anarchistic, I don't think he meant that in a bad way, like the Guy Fawkes anarchism, destructive anarchism, or whatever you want to call it. He was talking more about living life by your own rules as close as possible, as closely as possible, as can be achieved in a modern, mechanized, industrialized, developed nation. That is, going and setting up a table with books, physical items you've acquired, used books. That is, the utter simplicity of it is fascinating and brilliant. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that. I had a need for that too. I had done other jobs before selling books on the street, and obviously since then. And that was the one occupation I've had where regulation was really almost completely absent. But it was self-regulating. That's what's interesting. The booksellers would, you know, keep an eye on each other's tables. Nobody could, you know, make a big mess. You know, other booksellers would intervene and kind of prod and poke that person to behave. So there was a sort of a, to behave, to maintain a tidy setup. I've seen that in different parts of town, wherever it would be. On 6th Avenue, generally, the setups are quite tidy. On West 4th Street as well. And even on 3rd Avenue and Astor Place. Now, during those days, the mid-90s, if you went as far as like St. Mark's Place in the East Village, you started to find really scattered setups along St. Mark's where people were just, you know, selling junk, selling books laid out on the sidewalk without any propriety or consideration for the environment. That is where I see it sort of ebbed off and started to enter the world of the being somewhat wanton. But that was only on the frontier over by St. Mark's and beyond. The nominal established clusters of sidewalk booksellers always seem to be self-regulating and maintaining their own code, their own way, in a way which did not realistically impede the life of any passerby or even a business. I mean, I can't recall any instance where a bookstore nearby complained about us. And conversely, we would know better than to set up. You would not set up a table of used books right outside a used bookstore. It just wasn't proper. And this inner knowledge or code, I've seen it in other environments as well, where regulation, external governance was lacking. I've seen functioning environments. I think quickly back to 9/11. I was in New York in 9/11. I went down and volunteered as a, right away, I was carrying buckets of Gatorade and water and little trays of snacks and stuff down into the pit, into Ground Zero, where the firemen were clawing away, sometimes literally with their hands, and they needed Gatorade. They were always asking for Gatorade. They were asking for water, and they're so anyway. During that whole 9/11 time, in the initial day, 9/11, when I woke up, went downstairs, and saw the chaos, looking downtown, actually, no one knew what had actually happened. It was just downtown Manhattan, where the World Trade Centers had been, was just a gray-black cloud, and you couldn't see anything. And there were all these cars stopped on Avenue of the Americas, 6th Avenue, with their radios playing and trying to get reports of what was happening. And people were rumoring and saying, well, one little plane hit one of the towers and the other one fell down and hit that other tower and they both fell down. I mean, I heard amazing stories about that. But anyway, my point is, when I went down, I was sharing an office space, I had a desk space at a place called Organization of Independent Artists down on Hudson Street, about 5 blocks away from the World Trade Center. So I immediately went down there on my bicycle when I sort of saw and sensed something really precipitous and epic happening downtown. Went downtown, and it was clear that there was no established order, even amongst the police, the fire department. I mean, they were trying, yes, but it was like a wartime type situation, and everybody was rushing in. People were staggering out, covered in white dust, and some people were walking by with Starbucks cups, you know, cups of coffee. It was just like this mad circus. But what I'd like to point out regarding the self-governing societies is that people behaved themselves. There was no looting. You know, there was no or minimal exploitation of the situation, and people generally were self-governing. So that could be also part of it too. I guess this ties into a sort of meta New York type thing. But beyond that, when push comes to shove, I think society as a whole, when left unregulated, is not destined to descend into anarchy, which is the ironic thing about Lawrence Ferlinghetti's statement. People, without any necessary prompting or conditioning to do so, most, not all, but most will generally adhere to a civil way of functioning, a civil society that functions. So that's an insight I gained from selling books on the street. We were unregulated, except near the end when we were forced, you know, to try to get a tax stamp, which some of us got, and some of the more together of us got, and some stragglers never got. But we were still all nonetheless self-regulating. And insofar as the community of sidewalk booksellers, being unregulated, still were self-moderating to a degree and had their own code of ethics, which functioned and worked well with the rest of society, I think that's very telling that it can work. And so that would be a key insight that I gained from the whole experience. Besides that, yeah, there are tons of stories and anecdotes and things I learned about people and how somebody could end up, maybe they were broke and then they found a way to make a living, maybe doing books or whatever, and they pulled themselves up, and that sort of slingshotted them into a whole new viable way of life. Some of the more, I guess, less joyful or celebratory insights might be that if you are on the street, whether you're a hot dog man or you're selling fine artwork or handmade leather bags or whatever, you're still a part of the street. And there are people who are kind of the part of the elite echelons who will judge you and just write you off as someone belonging to the street. I've seen, for example, when I was selling books on the corner of Mercer and West 4th, a woman I know from film school who we were in the same acting class together, got along well and so forth. And I remember when I was a street bookseller, she would pass by the stand, but she wouldn't stop to say anything. It was as if she had decided to put blinders on because I was, quote unquote, unworthy or a street bookseller. Even though I was sometimes raking in hundreds of dollars in cash, it didn't matter. It's the signal of the strata. If you signal, in whether through your occupation or unwittingly, that you are part of a certain strata, then you may be pigeonholed by others. You may be judged. There is a class. So I can see that insight too. There is a class in America, for sure. We all know that now. It's a class society. Princeton in 2014 had their study, which they released, which declared that the United States is not actually a democracy, that it is driven by elites. And I can see that there's a schism between the so-called elites, people who have a lot of money, usually through their families, usually through inheritance, usually through assets, even if it's an apartment, even if it's access to a family apartment, that gives you a leg up and you're kind of part of a higher echelon. You are kind of a part of the elite versus people who are clawing and hustling to get by and still making good money. But even those people who are hustling to get by may not be accepted by people who are from established families or come from patrician or elite backgrounds. And I think that's just part of human nature, you know. The alternative would be a sort of socialist situation, and that experiment obviously didn't work out. And I've seen over here in Asia, yeah, it's very hierarchical. You have the big man or woman and the proxies pyramiding down below, and you're expected to fit in. I'm talking about locals. As an expatriate, it's slightly different. You have the role of the foreigner, which is kind of an oddball thing. But yeah, I also think that would be an insight too, that I can see that despite the rhetoric or the history, that America is a class society. And it was the classes, people with power, who were driving the whole quality of life program, really, and pushing the mayor to do something, to clean up the streets, whether that was they were real estate developers or a university in the neighborhood, whatnot. People with power were still at work in the States in a pluralistic democratic society, driving, I wouldn't say mandating what happens, but certainly influencing what happens to a greater degree than people who are not from elite backgrounds can do. I don't have any dark secrets, actually. No dark secrets. It was generally generally very transparent and pretty open, the whole bookseller environment. By way of example, let's say there was a new bookseller who just had come and set up near you. Unlike typical elite stratifications, the street booksellers would welcome the stranger and, you know, wouldn't prod or poke them with their elbows, but would just let them be. You know, there was no initiation there was no hazing, as you can see in other cliques and groups. It was interesting in that respect. And let's say, by way of example, the new bookseller needed to go get a slice of pizza or take a piss, whatever. It was understood that the neighboring bookseller would watch the table, and if someone bought a book, would collect the money and would hand the money over without any, not even a thought of keeping it. It was beyond a code. It was almost like a holy thing. You would never keep another bookseller's money. That was striking too. And that all went without being said. It's not like the new, this didn't happen. It's not like the new bookseller would show up and then there was a powwow where everyone sat down and told them the rules. That didn't happen. It was very forgiving and loose and accommodating. Maybe because the booksellers were kind of, as a group, up against external forces, or not even up against them, but the weather alone is an external force, let's say that. So there are many, many instances where the code of the bookseller society automatically leapt into play, almost genetically, without anyone explaining what to do. And that was really insightful, yes. I can see that being a part of human nature, and as I mentioned with the 9/11 example, that when push comes to shove, generally speaking, if people are allowed to act on their own critical thinking and initiative, will generally function well without being dicks to each other and with their own set of reasonable, uncodified rules. And that's human nature. I think it's just the minority of psychopaths who, in society, especially in a litigious society like America, I mean, that would comparing America to Southeast Asia, it's not as litigious in Southeast Asia, so people don't have to be so neurotic about covering their asses over here. Whereas in the States, however it happened, it's become very litigious, and a lot of the codification and regulation, I think, is an outgrowth of that, and so forth, you know. But that's just a nutshell answer anyway.